back on the Boss Man Show, friend of the show, Mr. Dixie, Tennessee representative, District 54 to my district. Well, Vincent, my man, how you been, brother? Been a while since we talked, man. I hope all's well with you and the family, man.
Man, everybody's doing well. Thank you for reaching out, and I appreciate you always giving me this platform to talk, and I appreciate you using your platform to get the word out to the people so they know what's going on and keep them informed. But everything's going good on this end, you know, just going through the daily grind, doing what we have to do. Been dealing with stuff up at the State House, redistricting, but we just about through that, so we'll see how that goes.
Now, Vincent, what's crazy about it is this, man. I looked at the map, okay? My father lives off Douglas Avenue. You know I live in my street bike. It's crazy. Dixon Road is the line of demarcation that I'm 7, basically, Dixon Road being to that side of it. And he sits over on Douglas. And then you got South Nashville is 5. And it's crazy. You can be in a tight game in District 6, but in downtown, you're District 7. It's crazy.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense how they drew that line. It was very vindictive. It was just a way. So let's go back. There's 3 different maps, right? There's the House map, there's the Senate map, and then there's the Congressional map. And the Congressional map is what you're referring to. The Congressional map, it basically, I'm going to use the word tears. It tears Nashville into 3 different parts, and that's what you're talking about. And what it truly does, you say in those areas, you gave the perfect example of just you and your dad about how normally in this voting block, y'all would normally vote together. But now if you had a 27% voting power in how it used to be, now it's diminished to about 11%. So it's what it does, it diminishes the power of the African-American vote, because we normally vote as a block. And 2, it just doesn't make sense. When they say that 3 is better than 1, that's a cock a bull, because you don't have one person can concentrate on this particular area and make sure that they know what this area needs and they're familiar with the area. We could possibly have 3 different congressmen that live nowhere near. They could literally live 50 to 100 miles away from Nashville that would represent us. So do you think, on the back end, do you even think that we're going to get good constituent services? You know, Jim Cooper always, you know, he was known for giving out his cell phone number, right? You can call him on his cell phone anytime. That's how accessible he was. You know, you think in this hyper-partisanship environment that we live in, man, and even at the State House, people won't even return your phone call if you're not of the same party. Like, once I got elected, yes, Democrats elected me, but I still serve all of Tennessee, regardless of your political affiliation. And if you need help, I'm here to help. But other people don't think like that. And I think that that's going to become a major problem in Tennessee. You're going to have the biggest economic driver in Tennessee. We were thinking about Nashville represents about 33% of the revenue for the state of Tennessee. You can have somebody who doesn't truly understand the economic driver, somebody that may live in a town of 1,500 people that could represent us. That makes no sense.
Exactly. And like you said, I have Jim Cooper's number. I've talked to him personally, as you said, because he's accessible. I can talk to you because you're accessible, because I'm a constituent, but you don't know my needs. You don't know what we need in Northwest Nashville if you live in, I guess, some far out place like Dover or somewhere, right? And that's what a 7 is, like Dover and Montgomery County and on down the road there. And you know, my father, District 6, that cat could live out in Putnam County somewhere almost. And literally, we're across Dixon Road from each other. We're in the same exact town. One major thoroughfare separates my father and myself from being together. But we're in two different districts. It's Vincent, it's surgical. It's racially done. I know it's racially done. They can deny it, but come on. The way you carved up Nashville and that crap, well, you get 3 better than 1. No.
Did was they took their direction from the national RNC, and they followed it to the letter. They wanted a stranglehold on Tennessee. But what people don't realize, and what I keep trying to tell people, Tennessee doesn't have to be red. Tennessee is red because we don't come out and vote. Tennessee is red. We're 46th in voter turnout. 46th. Does that mean there's only 4 other places that's better than us? We're at the bottom of voter turnout, right? So imagine if we could just get to 43, 42, 40. You know, those are hundreds of thousands of votes that's just left out on the table that people are registered to vote but just don't vote, or people are eligible to vote but not registered to vote. We have to go meet them where they are. The other side has done a masterful job of getting people to believe that their vote doesn't count. And if your vote didn't count, I just want people to just use a little common sense. If your vote didn't count, why would they try to diminish your voting power? Why would they try to reduce how and eliminate how you vote, restrict voting, if it wasn't that important? And I say, you know, I vote because it was important to me. I understand the historical value and what people went through toward that. So it's my obligation to vote. I don't have a choice. I have to vote. But if you get out there and you vote, we can turn Tennessee. Tennessee has been back blue. People always compare Tennessee to Georgia, but there's one major difference. Georgia was never blue. Tennessee has been blue before. And we can get back there because we just got to get back to the common sense stuff. People have gone out to these cultural wars and it has become almost race divided. If you're Republican, it's almost been race divided. It's not based on issues. All we're trying to do as Democrats, we want to make sure that you have food on your table, make sure you got enough money to pay your bills. And if you get sick, go see a doctor. That's all. That's it. Then we can worry about everything else. It comes along after that.
Yeah. Exactly. And Vince, as you said that, I saw some Republicans in Tennessee taking credit for Biden's Build Back Better plan for infrastructure in Tennessee, but they didn't vote for it. Because I can attest to you, driving to Atlanta in southern Rutherford County, it's potholes on that road. It can mess up my vehicle. So it's needed, okay? And
yeah, even the town is needed. Yeah, in Tennessee, we're like a pay-as-you-go state when it comes to the Department of Transportation. So any roads, we don't do like other some other states where they take bonds out to pay for it, or they borrow against, or you know, other get taxpayers to do some other financial wrangling. We pay as you go. So this Build Back Better plan, not only is it going to give us better roads, it's going to create a lot more jobs. It's going to put people back to work. And but also the Build Back Better plan, what it does is it creates a pathway for universal health, not healthcare, but universal child care. And that is huge because a lot of people, it's hard for them to work 10 to 12, 13 hour jobs and still have to pay for daycare. And so we have to make sure that we can make sure that their daycare is taken care of so that they can go work and be productive and do what they need to do in order to take care of their family.
No doubt, man. And like you said, man, Tennessee needs to have jobs that are competitive too, because our jobs in Tennessee are below the poverty line. You can't survive on that. You know, you're pretty much just meeting your work requirement to get your food stamps and Medicaid. You're not really living. You can't really survive. So do you feel like
sometimes it may be just enough over it that disqualifies you?
Exactly. And do you feel like this plan for infrastructure will help give the training as well to get those better jobs for these people, Tennesseans, when you need it from Mountain City to Memphis, you know, because we all Tennesseans, you know, so as you say, we all are Tennesseans together. It doesn't matter my affiliation, what we think we are. We all have the same issues. So you feel like this plan will set up training as well, and with the higher paying jobs to have Tennesseans have more money and get these cities who are smaller in some of the suburban towns outside Nashville and Memphis better to be going to go forward?
Man, it's almost like that we worked together to write this, but I know people don't know that we didn't write this. But there's a perfect segue to, you know, the Ford plant that's called the Blue Oval City that they're building right outside of Memphis, in between Jackson and Memphis. It's a $6 billion project, $5.6 billion. Of course, I embellish a little bit going up to $6 billion. Easy to say six and 5.6. But what we have what we've learned is that we don't have the workforce in order to fulfill all those jobs that's coming, because we've done a woeful job of job training, having people prepared for it, especially starting in high school. Because everybody, one thing is, you know, everybody may not be college material, but at the end of the day, when you graduate from high school, you need to be work ready or college ready. Because at the end of the day, everyone has to be self-sufficient and be a good citizen and take care of themselves. This is after what you just said highlights the point is that we don't have enough people that have the technical training that can fulfill these jobs, where do you think they're going to come from? Out of state. They're going to be taking Tennesseans' jobs that we need to be fulfilling. So we have to work with that. And the Build Back Better plan allows for that educational expense that where we can start building the pipeline for these jobs to fulfill these jobs. Because that's going to be transformational in West Tennessee. It's going to change a lot of people's trajectory as their family goes and it starts to get good paying jobs. But the one thing that I'm most disappointed about with the Blue Oval City, there was no minority participation rates set by the state in this. It's just going to be a free-for-all. Well, not everything a free-for-all. It's going to be the usual suspects that gain from this. You know, this is an opportunity where minorities and Black and brown companies can become wealthy and build a future and an infrastructure for years to come for their families and their businesses. Off of this, this can be a springboard. And the government, which is run by Republicans again, they do not care about anybody other than themselves or already the rich or the people getting rich. This is an opportunity to redistribute some wealth here in Tennessee. And we're missing the boat here because the outlook or the failure to have the outlook from the governor and his administration.
And Tennessee is a state that is 37th in the nation for federal funding. You know, the low taxes and low regulation comes at a price for, hey, we're going to, they talk about their small government, but they live off the government and okay with people being hungry. Even their constituents who vote for them, religiously vote for them, you're okay with them being hungry, not having health care. I like to say close to the rural hospitals. I have in these towns in East Tennessee and West Tennessee, some of these smaller cities have nothing there, nothing to bring them up. They're just there. They're existing, you know?
They can't live off of that moniker saying that they believe in small government. That's not true anymore. Republicans want to control every phase of your life by policy. Look at the book bans that they're trying to do. Look at the CRT stuff. I mean, just look at all the stuff that they're trying to do because they're trying to control it. They want government in every phase of your life. No mask mandates. We don't care if you die. We don't care if you stay safe or not, but we want you to go to work and make a profit for these large corporations, but we don't care if your kids are safe when they go back to school so they can stay in school, so they can learn, because we all know that in-person learning is the best. But if we can't keep them in school and keep them safe, then what's the point? We made it illegal for them to go to virtually. And now they're getting ready to propose a bill that, because if you don't go 180 days, then you have the option to basically get a voucher. Which is all Governor Lee wanted from the beginning, was to get his voucher program in there. It's a big picture. People got to step back and just think, does this make sense? We get distracted by a lot of these things. Like, you start this CRT, this book banning stuff. You know, we don't want to talk about Martin Luther King. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do that. But at the end of the day, they are literally taking away your civil rights and your ability to make money in this state and just earn and just have a good living and be able to retire comfortably.
Exactly. And, you know, Vincent, every 2 weeks ago, I was sickened by the hypocrisy of Tennessee Republicans who was quoting MLK. You can't love MLK. None of your policies align with MLK. All your policies are targeted at the poor, people he cared about. None of your policies align with his vision. So you can't love him, Bill Lee, and Bill Hagerty and Marshall Blackburn, but then you do stuff like vote down the Voting Rights Act, or, you know, try to make these boogeyman CRT, or don't want to teach real history in school because you don't want to make white students uncomfortable. They need to be uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable every day, Bill Lee. You know what I'm saying? So, like, there's such hypocrisy in your colleagues and the governor, man. You're a better man than me, Vincent. I could be going crazy.
You know, when you come to the CRT, CRT isn't taught in high school at all, right? It's not taught in K through 12 at all here in Tennessee, not at all. But they listen to the media, listen to the Republicans, you would think that that's, as soon as they get in, it's taught from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. from the time they get in there. But I guess what worries me the most is that when you try to, even if, you know, the way that they want to ban these books about Martin Luther King and things of that nature, like, why do you not want them to know the history of this country? Black people built this country on their back. I mean, with their blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, this country is what it is because of the slave trade of our people. And it's inherent upon to that is part of American history. And really, so if you want to really call CRT, another synonym for it is actual American history, right? We need to learn it. When we, from the time we're in kindergarten until we go to 12th grade, till we graduate, every year we're taught American history. When you talk about white privilege, that is the ultimate white privilege that you get to determine what history is taught. Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate. And then anything that's against that, you say, no, we don't want our kids to learn that. No, you don't want. You want everyone in America, in Tennessee right now, I'm going to speak for Tennessee. You want every child to look through the lens of a white child. They don't have those experiences.
Exactly.
You have to be able to appreciate me for my differences. And that way you can understand me. You can understand my rationale, why I may respond a certain way to something or the way I think about something. That's the way that we can get together to try to figure out how to make this world a better place. When you do every day, man, and I know I'm getting off subject, but every day when we go into the session, go into the house chamber, we pray before we start. I think that's the most hypocritical thing that we do every time. And it hurts me to actually do that because it's like it's a farce. Because how can we go in here and pray, say, oh, we love one another. We want to do this and we want to do that. But then you go around and you turn around, you want to penalize, you want to take away health care for immigrants because they're undocumented. Or you want to take away voting rights for people. Or you take, you know, it's so much ugliness that we do. Where is the common thread of decency that keeps us together? It seems like it has been torn to shreds. Where is it? Why is it that the race means so much more than just the love for my common person, my common man? It's gone. Mm-hmm. It's just gone.
Exactly.
How do we get that back?
Exactly. And you know, that's why I cringe when I hear people, some people tote the Bible, like, what, I'm like, WWJD, what would Jesus do? Would he take away health care? Would he take away voting rights? But this is the man you say you love and you follow. But your actions and how you move is nowhere near that. And It happens here in Georgia, same thing in Georgia, CRT, down to Florida. Like, you can't whitewash MLK. You can't whitewash history. It is what it is. And like Vince, I'll tell you the truth. I learned more about our history from my father and mother outside the classroom because it was not taught. My father said, this is not the truth, son. He said, for your test, give them this answer. But in reality, it's this. And I thank my father and mother for doing that for me because I would not know what I know now about our people and our history. It wasn't for my mother and father telling me for your books, say this for class, but this is the truth.
If your mother and father is telling you that, what do you think other people's parents were telling them? The people, non-people of color. What do you think their parents or grandparents was telling them? Civil rights movement wasn't that long ago. 60 years is not that long ago. I always tell my daughter, you know, you look at your uncle, when he was born, black people couldn't vote. Granddad, when he was born, he was a grown man until he had the right to vote. I mean, a very grown man. You know, he had gone to college before he had the right to vote. And he served his country before he had the right to vote. So I want people to understand it's not that long ago. So imagine what your parents are telling you, what their grandparents and their parents told them. And that perpetuates the cycle. And if you start to ban these books and you don't have these open discussions about it, it's going to continue to grow this divide between us here in Tennessee, but in the nation as well. Stereotypes have just gone crazy, man. And, you know, did you see that? I know you saw this about the basketball player that was over in China and he was getting off the bus and they were calling him nigger this and nigger that and stuff. It's like, these are Chinese people calling black people. What? You know, that's a learned behavior. Why? Why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's because people lose their common thread of decency.
Mm-hmm. And Vince, think about this. My grandmother, who votes for you, was born in 1931. My father's born in 1941. My mother's born in 51. Did you see just hit their ages? You know, you have 91-year-old woman coming up here. You're going to have an 81-year-old man and 71-year-old woman now. My mother was born on January 9th. Telling me about history. So you were right. When they were born, we couldn't vote. And my parents still vote. My mother and grandmother vote in your district, of course. My father's in another district now. But, like, think about that for me. I'm born in 87. So my parents and grandparents taught me about our history and told me the real truth about who we are and our root and our ground and our way of knowing. And you're right, Vincent. I try to tell people all the time, you know, I'm not a mean person, but when people don't understand my rooting and my grounding, why I react to a certain way, I react to certain things, don't tell me I'm wrong or I'm irrational. Because for me, when I hear National Anthem, my parents talk about that third verse, okay? And that hits me the wrong way. So I don't sing it. I'm being real with you. I don't stand it. But at the Hawks game, you will see me sitting down. I'm being honest about this, being real with you about it. Because my parents never made me know. You don't put this in something that doesn't love you. So these things that my parents taught me, but others who are not Black or don't have that same grounding, take it the wrong way because they don't understand our perspective on these things when it comes to American and American history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's American. We can go on and on about this for hours because I see we're both passionate about this. But I'm going to refocus us and get us back on this redistricting stuff. So when it comes to redistricting, I just wish that there was a better, more inclusive way to get this done. I wish, like in other states, there's like bipartisan groups or nonpartisan groups that actually draw these maps that are not affiliated, you know, with the legislature at all. And I think that may be a best way to go, because at the end of the day, we just want fair maps and then the best man win. But I feel like these maps have been rigged. No, don't feel like it. These maps have been rigged. In order to continue to have this power that they have. I mean, they have a supermajority now. It's like right now they're trying to secure power for the next 100 years. And we don't have to let them do that. We will be filing a lawsuit, you know, to challenge this in court. It should be, hopefully that should be done this week. And we just have to fight back. You know, hope it's not all gloom and doom here. That's why I said I'm excited. I'm hopeful because we're 46th in the nation in voter turnout. That gives me hope. Now, if we were this red and we were like in the top 10 in voter turnout, I'd be like, oh, man, there's no hope. But people got to get up off their butt, get out. We got to go make sure that everyone's registered to vote. Whenever you talk to somebody, you got to make sure, hey, are you registered to vote? If not, here, let me pull up on my phone. It literally takes 2 minutes to do. But we need to do that. And what I encourage people to do is go early vote. Because when you early vote and there's a problem, we have time to fix it.
No doubt. Right. Now, Vincent, have they changed about mail-in voting? Or has that not changed?
No, they haven't changed.
Okay.
And I think that we have a person that's going to propose a bill that where it allows for like, because right now, if you're a first-time voter, you can't vote absentee voting. You have to vote in person before you can do that. But I want to give you a caveat to that. Like, for instance, my daughter turns 18 during her senior year. There may not be an election to the next fall. She'll be in college, right? And if she doesn't go to college in Nashville, how is she going to vote? Unless she has to come back here just to vote, and then she can do it. That absolutely makes no sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she should be able to vote where she is and vote in that race. And we should make sure that students here have that same opportunity. It seems like common sense isn't so common in the legislature.
Now, let me ask you this question, because I know you know better than I would. Do the state Tennessee targets college kids who like go to Memphis or Tennessee State or UTC who are here as students? Can they vote in Tennessee, or are they forced to vote in their home states?
Basically, you're still forced to vote in your home state. Or, but you have to jump through some hoops to get it done. Like you have to have your birth certificate, you have to change your voter registration here and things of that nature, but you have to have your vote, you have the birth certificate. And I don't know how many parents are gonna trust their 18, 19-year-olds with their birth certificates to do stuff like that. It's not an easy process. It could be a lot easier. And right now, if you go to a college, there's certain criteria you already had to meet to be in college, right? You know that you're a U.S. citizen. We know that you've met some federal requirements. So why couldn't that college ID be sufficient in allowing you to vote?
Correct. And, you know, it's all about trying to slice off a percentage here, percentage there. It's all about trying to get enough suppression of the vote to win. Because as you said earlier, Vincent, it's no IDs. It's just divide and conquer. You know, it's no real policy to help you other than that, hey, they're bad, they're socialists, they're this, they're that, and we're not. That's the only policy they have right now. And Tennesseans need to get wise to what you're trying to do for them. And tonight's State of the State address is going to be full of crap, you know, of lies. And thank God for your pre-bundle that you did, because maybe people can look, okay, it's what they're saying, what he's saying. And let's do the math on it, fact check it all, and then hopefully people will see the light and say, hey, we need to go try something different here. This, the way this is not working for us.
Yeah, we'll also have a rebuttal to this evening as well. So I'll be doing that as well. So I'll be busy today. But I think people, my job is just to tell the truth, man, and let people know and hold people accountable for what they're doing. You know, we're playing with people's lives. But a lot of legislators, when they're up there, it's just a game to them. It's the way, how do I gain power? Because they have money. So it's like, how do I gain power? You got the speaker who wants to be the next governor. You know, you got the governor who still wants to be the governor again. Plus, he wants to be the president of the United States. So it's like, just do your job. If you do your job, everything else will fall into place. You know, but we're not going to take any of this stuff laying down. We're going to fight like hell and make sure that we have good candidates in the congressional districts here, and not only in Nashville, but across Tennessee. We're going to make it competitive. We're going to work for it. Don't think that it's just going to, you're going to walk in and think it's going to be okay. It ain't going to happen.
Let me ask you about the House districts. How did they change? Because I know I looked at the map. I think I'm still in your district still. I think I am.
Yeah. Well, there was some movement on those things. And like, just to show how vindictive they were, well, the first proposed map was they drew me, the first chairman, that's the first Black chairman of the House Caucus, and I represent a 99% African-American district. They took only my street and drew it into an 80% white district, right? It's a Democratic district, but it's 80% white. And so they pitted me against one of my colleagues. But eventually they changed that. They had pitted 9 Democrats against each other, almost a third of my caucus against each other. And for what, right? You know, you already have all the power, everything. So we were able to unpit some of us against each other. Then we were also able to, the maps, they're just horribly drawn, but they still pitted 2 people in Memphis against each other, which is Shelby County, and 2 people in Knoxville and Knox County against each other. And it's just not fair, you know, but the maps are just, they're racially drawn. We just got to make sure that we get people out and get out there to vote. I don't care how you draw, you can draw them like a tic-tac-toe line. But if people come out and vote, that will change everything. That's why it was so important that we, hopefully people see this now, but it was so important for us to complete that census. Because, you know, the thing is that, well, Shelby County is losing a seat because they don't have a lot of population. They lost population. They probably hadn't lost population. But, you know, as Black people, and we're skeptical of giving the government any of our information. But then this one time we asked them, like, it's okay to give them your social security number and information about the household. And they're like, I don't know. So we, you know, people, we're feeling the effects of that because people didn't fill out that census.
Yeah, and I'll try to do that as well. They say, I'm not doing that. You're right. They say hesitation because as Black people, we really don't trust the government like that. So it's like, you know, it's hard. And what did you run out? That's resources for the state of Tennessee and your community. And so, like you said, they draw the lines off of that stuff as well, man. And, you know, for you guys going forward, what's going to be the plan for us to get getting people out to vote? Go, you'll be doing door-to-door on the weekends or doing drives in different places. I know you post Instagram about stuff you've been doing as well. So what's the plan to get people registered to vote this crucial year of 2022 and going forward?
Yeah, first we have to organize, and we got to organize and mobilize all of the grassroots organizations, you know, the Equity Alliances, everything that you could possibly think of. We have to hit the ground running, and we got to go meet people where they are. We can't sit at the Kroger's and wait for people to come and say, hey, are you registered to vote? We got to get out in these neighborhoods. We got to get churches going. We need the pastors, everybody going. You know, everybody has to play their part. It's not one particular person that's going to make this happen. It's going to be a collective effort and a collaborative effort of a lot of grassroots organizations, leaders in the community, us as elected leaders. We're going to all have to work together and get off our butts and get out there and get people registered to vote. And so it's no one size fits all. It's just going to take work.
No doubt. Well, Vincent, man, thank you for your time. It was a busy day for you today for joining me, man. And, you know, I'm going to be there and be supporting you as always, brother. You know, I'm going to be there for you. So if you need me, let me know. Soon the holiday season's over with, I'll be in Nashville until the season starts again. So if you need me, I'll be out there with you in the streets, brother. Trust me on that.
All right. Well, thank you, brother. It's a pleasure always speaking with you.
All right, man. Be safe, brother.
You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.